Scripture reading this morning comes from John 12, 37 through 43. Even after Jesus had performed so many signs in their presence, they still would not believe in him. This was to fulfill the word of Isaiah the prophet. Lord, who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For this reason they could not believe, because as Isaiah says elsewhere, he has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, so they can neither see with their eyes nor understand with their hearts, nor turn, and I would heal them. Isaiah said this because he saw Jesus' glory and spoke about him. Yet at the same time, many, even among the leaders, believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they would not openly acknowledge their faith for fear they would be put out of the synagogue, for they loved human praise more than praise from God.
Jesus has performed a lot of signs in the presence of the people. This is in by John 12, the triumphal entry has happened. It's the culmination of his ministry has taken place. So this is Passion Week, where a lot of people still have not accepted who Jesus is. And they've seen, you know, he's fed the 5,000, he's walked on water, he's raised Lazarus. He's healed a blind man. Pharisees have even, like, inspected to see, like, it was a legit healing. But some still refuse to believe. And that's really the way John is painting them there, as if all the evidence is plainly laid out. You can see it. It's obvious. It's there. Jesus is from God. But some just refuse. It's as if God is saying, hey, 2 + 2 = 4. And they're saying, well, if you think about it, you know what? I mean, what is the definition of the word is? You know, they're just weaseling out of it however they can. They will not accept what has become clear and obvious. And so I think it's almost as if they believe it, but they can't accept it. Some versions say they can't confess that it's true. Because to confess it, to fully accept who Jesus is, it would make claims on their lives. And they can't handle those claims. So they choose to not accept who Jesus is. They choose to not believe. And we know this is a kind of a theme in John, that there's these people who they really know, and they're just rejecting Jesus. Nicodemus, one of the Pharisees in John chapter 3, he outs everybody. He tells Jesus, we know that you're a teacher who's come from God. No one can do these signs that you do unless God is with that person. He's outing them. We all really know. We just can't accept it. We just can't act on it. We have to fight against it. Because accepting Jesus, they lose their power. Might have issues with their family. They might lose their community. And so one argument that John, when he was writing this, probably heard, one argument that some Jewish people who did not believe that Jesus was who he said he was, one argument they might make is, well, you know, if this Jesus guy was really from God, why didn't everybody believe him? Why didn't everybody submit to who he was? You really think if God came here, if God sent a messenger, everybody would listen, right? And so John quotes Isaiah 6, one of the most quoted Old Testament scriptures in the New Testament, saying, well, he's blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts. And so really what John is saying is, hey, you remember Isaiah? Yeah, people didn't listen to him either. They completely denied it. They closed their eyes. They closed their ears. They refused to listen to the words of God's messenger. See, God's people not listening to God, there's nothing new there. God's people rejecting God. Look, that's happened. It happened to Isaiah. And now
We're seeing it happen again. In maybe even a new, bigger, and more earth-shattering way than ever before. So really, yeah, your argument that people are rejecting Jesus, so he must not be from God? No, that's almost, it actually almost confirms that he is from God, because God's people have a long history of rejecting the message of God. And so John really knows what's going on here. He says that, look, there's these people who, all the evidence is there. They just don't want to confess it. They don't want to accept it. And John knows why. He knows why. He says it's because they love human praise more than the praise that comes from God. Caring too much about what people think, what people will do to you, that kept them from accepting Jesus. Caring too much about what people think kept them from confessing Jesus. It kept them from acknowledging all this evidence that's right there. They couldn't do it because they were afraid of what people might do to them. I think maybe we're all a little guilty of this, right? Of wanting approval of people more than God. There's something natural in us, maybe, right, that wants to be known and liked, accepted. Those are normal feelings. Those are normal needs. But sometimes we turn those into idols, into desires that we chase, and we want fame, and we want praise, and we chase that approval of others. We want to be known. We want to be great. We want to be significant. Like we see here, that can separate us from God. But it's really also living for others' approval. That's an unhealthy and difficult way to live. And I think God wants to free us from that. Some of us, and I always go up and down wrestling with being a people pleaser, living for the approval of others. I know some of you are like, I'm done with that. Some of you don't care anymore about the approval of others. You got to let that go a long time ago. But I think a lot of us in here, we may still struggle with people pleasing. And maybe even some of you who say, I don't really, you may still identify with a few of these problems. But here's a few things that people pleasers tend to do. They tend to have an extraordinary fear of rejection. Don't reject me. I want you to like me. I'll do what it takes. I'll do what it takes for you to accept me. I don't want to do anything that might hurt you or might hurt this relationship or might make you feel different about me. Please do not reject me. Or they have a really hard time saying no. You ever felt that way? Like, I'm going to do what I don't really want to do just because I don't want this person to be mad at me. Or I don't want to be in this awkward situation, so I'm just not going to say no. I don't want them to be mad. People pleasers take criticism personally. This is when we talked about the first week of this series, right? Sometimes it is so hard to hear difficult, negative feedback. And if we're a people pleaser, sometimes what we do is we take that little difficult, negative feedback and we just let it wash over our whole being. Say, oh, that one criticism, well, then I guess I'm not worth it. I guess I'm a bad person. I guess I'm horrible. Sometimes that's the people pleaser mindset. Something I've noticed about hearing criticism is I can take that criticism a lot better when I know it's coming from someone who loves me and supports me. To hear, hey, here's this issue, here's this thing I didn't like, or here's this thing that hurt me, but I know, like, we're still cool, and this bad thing I did, that hasn't broken our relationship. That hasn't changed how they feel about me. Now, if I don't know that, then that criticism is going to be really hard to hear. It's going to be really hard to hear criticism if I think, like, oh, this has hurt how you see me and who you think I am. That criticism's harder to hear. And then the last one here, they can't express true feelings. That's what we talked about last week. People pleasers have a hard time saying what they really feel because they're afraid, well, this might hurt your feelings. Then I wouldn't be pleasing you. And if I hurt your feelings, that might change the way you feel about me. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to change your opinion of me. I don't want to change your view of me. So they can't say what really needs to be said. And then, of course, if you do all these, you might end up just being a doormat. I know it's something I've wrestled with a lot, is I oftentimes do well at this sometimes, and then I start slipping up again. But sometimes I care too much about what people think about me, to the point where it is a sin. to the point where it is wrong, to the point where it does damage to me. And I really think a lot of ministers have a hard time with this. Because ministers, we're on stage a lot, we get our ego fluffed a lot, we get picked on a lot at the same time, and it can be really hard. And I've heard, I've mentioned this stat before, that as a minister, it doesn't matter how good you are, how spirit-led you are, how charismatic you are, like 10% of the congregation is just not going to like you. They're just not going to like you, or they're going to, some will even like hate you. There's just, it doesn't matter. 10% is not going to like you. I mentioned this in class one time. Matt Waldrop just blurts out, 10% seems kind of low, Brady. Ouch. Well, we know where Matt stands. But I actually, as like hard as that is to hear, like, hey, some people just aren't going to like you, it's actually a little freeing. It's actually a little, I don't have to be captive to that. It doesn't matter. Someone's just going to not get me. Someone's just going to misunderstand me. There's just going to be some people that don't like you. And you know what? I think that doesn't just apply to ministers. That's probably all of us in here, right? There's always going to be someone who's just got an issue with you. It happened to Jesus. There were people that did not like the perfect Son of God. There were people that rejected him. We see it in the text. And you live life long enough, you're going to realize people will be mad at you for doing the right thing. People will get mad at you for doing the right thing. You'll see that. I've seen it as a minister. You see it as a leader. You see it in your friendships and relationships. You can't please everybody. You can't have everyone be happy with you and like you. And maybe that's hard to hear, but it's very freeing. And so something really important I want you to hear this morning. You can't please everybody, but you can please God. You can't please everybody, but you can please God. Back when I lived in Pryor, when Layla was a little baby, I can't remember what it was, but it was one of those, you know, some of y'all remember with babies. It was one of those like emergency nights. We're having a hard time with the baby, and I'm running to the grocery store and picking something up that is needed urgently. It's needed now. I can't remember if it was food or formula or diapers or whatever it is, but I just beeline into that grocery store. I grab what I need, and I run in, and I see the first empty register, and I just jerk in and go in there. And as soon as I jerk in there and throw my stuff on the register, give it to the clerk, I realize out of the corner of my eye, I just totally cut someone off. I just butted in front of somebody in a way that was like pretty rude and offensive. Like, should not have done that. And so I'm like, oh no. Well, I've already done it. The clerk's already got my stuff. So I turned to look and acknowledge what had just happened. And out of all the people that I could have just cut off, you wouldn't believe who it was. I look over there and I see him, and we both kind of look at each other and say, oh, you. It was the guy from the ER last week. The same guy that I offended previously. I've had no interactions with this guy. None. And I've offended him again. The guy who called the police on me, that guy. The guy I've had zero interactions, a complete stranger. Zero interactions with him, except these two. And both were pretty much like the worst of who I am. They were me being rude and in a horrible place. And I was just thinking like, man, this guy does not like me. And, you know, if you told me, oh, so-and-so doesn't like you, you know, this guy, you know, I would have a problem with it. You know, if you told me Matt Waldrop doesn't like me, I'd be like, well, what did I do? You know, did I offend him? Is there something I did that hurt him? Like, what can I, is there something I need to be doing differently? Is there something wrong with me? But when you say this guy that I was changing the channel when he was trying to watch a show, button in front of him at the grocery store, you told me that guy doesn't like me, then I get it. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. I understand that he, but you know what I really know is like, well, he doesn't really know me. This is just he's just seen a small sample of who I am, and by some like really strange set of circumstances, he's seen me at my worst twice. And that's all he knows about me. Thankfully, he doesn't know I'm the minister at the Church of Christ in town. I don't want that reputation. But that's all he knows about me. And so I can know, like, look, he doesn't really know me. He doesn't like me because there's some misunderstandings. And his sample of who I am has been a really bad sample. And I can believe if this dude really knew me, he'd know I'm not a horrible person. And probably if I really knew him, we would be okay. We could probably really understand each other. But I believe, and maybe this is just something I tell myself, I believe if he really knew me, we'd be okay. He'd think I'm an all right guy. But you know what? I actually believe that about everyone. That if you peeled back all of who someone is, if you knew everything about, if you really knew their heart, there'd be something really worth liking in everybody. Something really worth loving. If you really knew who people were, I believe there's some good in there that is worth loving. We have a God that sees it all. Everything we are. The deepest desires, our mindsets. He sees the good we do. Sees the bad we do. Sees everything. He alone examines the motives of our heart, like our text said. And all that, he still sees us and he says, well, you're worthy of love. Everyone's worthy of love. And it's not even about the good outweighing the bad. It's just for being. There's something stunningly beautiful about being a human being created in the image of God. So I have a God who already loves me. And when I really know that, when I believe that, when I'm sure of it, the approval of people becomes less important to me. I already have a God who loves me, who likes me. It feels so good to be loved by him. So I don't have to live for the approval of others. That's always going to keep me chasing more. If I could really be secure in his love, maybe I wouldn't need that so much. And then I can just feel safe living for God and trying to work to please God. I don't have to worry about what people think or want. I can just focus on honoring him. So a really good way to not be a people pleaser is to know that you are radically loved by God. So you don't need that. You don't have to have the love of others to validate you. 1 Thessalonians 2:4, Paul says this, we speak as messengers approved by God to be entrusted with the good news. Our purpose is to please God, not people. He alone examines the motives of our hearts. I really think if we grasped how much the God of the universe really loves us, if we really understood it, we wouldn't be that worried about the praise of people. Wouldn't care about what everyone thinks of us. Wouldn't be worried about our reputation in town or if we look good enough. We know we have a God who loves us. And we seek his approval. And I think we would, if we knew how God really felt, we would speak more boldly. We'd listen more carefully. And I say we seek his approval. I think sometimes that sounds bad, right? To say, oh, I'm seeking God's approval. But God is the great creator of the universe, this God of all love. He's so great. He's so powerful. He's so beautiful. It's normal to want his approval. And I just can't help but sometimes want to make God happy. I can't help but want to do things that make God proud. But I don't do that because I need his approval. I don't do that because it's going to get his approval. I do it from his approval. I'm not trying to get his approval. I've already got it. I've been washed in the blood of Christ. I'm approved by God. And that sounds almost sacrilegious to say. Stand up here before everybody and say, hey, I'm approved by God. Loved by God, okay. Forgiven by God, okay. But approved by God, isn't that something that only Jesus could claim? Yes, that's something really only Jesus has the right to claim. But by being washed in the blood of Christ, you receive what was due only to Jesus. You get to be in with God. So now, overwhelmed by grace and gratitude, I often, not always, I try to live this way, I try to do things and live in a way that God would approve of. I live from his approval, not for it, because I have it. So the holy resolution that we'll leave you with is to live from God's approval, to not live for people's approval. Can't please everybody, but you can please God. So be a God pleaser. It is easier than you think. If you are here this morning, you want to receive his grace, his forgiveness, his acceptance, dare I say his approval, by putting on Christ in baptism, we invite you to come now as together we stand and sing.